Hey everyone, welcome to Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjohn. The reason I started this podcast was growing up, music was my ultimate passion, but I didn't know how to get started. So this podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive view of the music world, from the artistry to the business, so you can discover the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. If you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. I truly appreciate that extra effort. Without further ado, here is the next episode of Made for Music. It's great to meet with you one-on-one. I feel like in this remote world we're in, it's kind of difficult to connect with all our classmates. And in this remote world, when class starts and it's off to the races.
Yeah, and then everyone's so busy with their own stuff because it is the graduate level. And so it's like, when do you have time to talk to anyone?
Totally. Outside of revenue streams, which courses are you taking?
Yeah, so I'm doing the class that we're in together, so revenue streams. And then I'm also taking business and music marketing, which that's been really hard. And then... what's the third? Data analytics.
Nice.
So that one's been really fun. How about you?
I'm only taking the one because I'm working full time as well. And when I first got on the call with the advisors, Mark was like, hey, please only take one. And I actually now wish I'd taken multiple, but I guess it's good to know now that I'm able to.
It's a lot, though.
Yeah,
it's a lot.
Totally. Which one's been your favorite, though?
That's hard. I really like revenue streams just because I like John Kellogg. He's a great, great educator. I think he's really funny, but
I
think he's great. Then I really like my data analytics class. I think that one's very interesting just because I've always, I wanted to actually do something in the music publishing administration realm. And so that kind of deals with a lot of like metadata, so we're not really doing that per se, but it is looking at data as a whole, which I think is super interesting.
Yeah, that's actually one of the courses that sold me on the program when I was looking into it. I felt like when I was reading the course description, I could see exactly how it apply.
Yeah.
Not that I didn't think the others would, but I'm really excited to take that one. I think I'm going to try and take that one next term.
Is this your first semester too, Ben?
Yeah, it is. Is it yours
cool.
as well?
Yeah. I went right from graduation to thinking, wow, this should be a good idea. And I don't know yet.
Yeah. I mean, with the pandemic, it feels like it'd be the go-to option, you know, because so much is shut down at the moment that you'll be better positioned to join the workforce. And especially if we can incorporate everything that's going on the here and now to what we're learning.
Definitely.
It's also awesome that you're able to find opportunities amidst it all. You know, with the album rollouts that Cam's doing, seems like a really exciting thing to be
Definitely.
A part of.
Definitely. Unexpected blessing.
Yeah, for sure. Well, welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast hails from Nashville, Tennessee, by way of Troy, Michigan. She may be one of the most well-rounded guests we've had, starting on piano by age 5, orchestra through elementary school. She trained professionally as a vocalist in high school and was the lead in the world premiere of Emma, a pop musical. She went on to study commercial voice at Belmont University, has interned for Haley and Michael, and is now pursuing her Master's of Music Business at Berklee College of Music. So without further ado, please welcome an extremely talented musician, songwriter, and businesswoman, the latest addition to the Grit and Magic Entertainment team, Tegan McCormick.
Hello, thank you so much for having me again.
Absolutely, it's my pleasure, and I guess we can jump right on in. I know I teed up some of this stuff, but do you mind walking me through how you got into music? Is it something that your folks pushed, or were you just really connected to it at a young age?
That's a fantastic question. So I actually started singing at like around pretty much when I started talking. So I really loved Annie, the musical, and would sing songs from that very, very young and early on, as well as songs from the Dave Matthews Band album Under the Table and Dreaming. And then my dad has a family friend, and when I was about 5 years old, he asked if we could piano sit for them.
I've never heard of that.
And Yeah. So he was living in an apartment at the time, and we had a big enough space for it. And actually, he was in New Hampshire. So it's kind of funny that it was, but I mean, he lived in Michigan before. So he had a storage unit that had the piano in it. And he asked if we would be willing to watch it. And so that's how I got started playing piano, is we started piano sitting. And it's been, 17 years, and we're still piano sitting.
Oh, nice. Just never got picked back up?
No, but I love it. It's a beautiful piano. It's beautiful. So
that's awesome. So was it from then on just full speed ahead on the piano?
Oh, yes. So I did some little like kids plays, I guess, in elementary school, which I don't think I put in my email to you. But I did a really cute one where I was a frog. And I had to wear this costume that was like made of felt, and it was really hot. And they had the cutest little song in there about how like you're not really fitting in and stuff. And it was just really sweet. And so that was one of my favorite memories. And then I just loved music so much that I just kept wanting to learn. And so I was given a choice in fifth grade of if I wanted to be in the band or the orchestra. And I chose violin. And quickly changed to the upright bass because I thought I'd be better at that, and I definitely was.
Nice. I heard violin's one of those that's really difficult and takes like 3 years or so to really get good, which inherently makes it more difficult to stick with because it takes so long to get to like an amateur level spot.
Yeah, and it's also hard too because I was double jointed, so my fingers would kind of like do this, like they'd smush against the strings, and I could never really get a great sound.
So they just bend like this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's tough. Yeah.
So it was a lot easier with bass because I think it was just the hand position was different. Like it wasn't as small because my thumb still bent back every time I would do the bass hand positions, but it just wasn't on a small scale like the violin. So it was easier, I guess.
For sure. I have the same thing with guitar, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, being able to bend my thumb like this actually really helps get my hand around the neck and whatnot. Anyways, I guess from there, were you doing all sorts of styles of music? What were you doing on piano to start off?
So there's a program, and I believe it's out of Australia, and it's called Simply Music. And so they have kind of a different approach. So it's a little bit of classical, because I did learn like Ode to Joy, for Elise, all those ones. But they also have some like contemporary songs, I guess, if you could call it that, and some jazz. And so I actually learned like the jazz chord progression, I think, before I even left elementary school, which was really cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's huge. And so when you went to orchestra, did you feel that was an easier transition, making the transition from piano to a stringed instrument?
Yeah. So I don't think I'm terribly great at reading treble clef. I think that's also going back to why I wasn't good at violin. It was just harder. And so bass clef on the piano, I was reading that really well. And so then that transitioned over when I switched to upright bass. I was just able to be faster at playing because I could understand the notes and I didn't have to write them in.
For sure.
But that part was definitely easier, for sure.
And you mentioned singing early on. Were you balancing like singing lessons with orchestra?
I actually was not taking voice lessons. I did a lot of choirs growing up. So I was in like an honors choir through the like Troy School District. And then I also did my church choir. But I did not take formal voice lessons until I was 15. And having a conversation with my piano teacher about me stopping piano lessons and starting voice lessons was so heartbreaking because yeah. I loved my piano lessons with Carrie. She was just the greatest.
Ugh, I feel that. I had that same conversation when I was quitting my piano lessons for guitar. I love my piano teacher. He really made me fall in love with music, but it wasn't the instrument of choice for me.
Yeah.
There was so much other stuff I wanted to do.
No, I feel that.
Guitar was that vehicle.
I'm sorry.
No. You are all good. We got some lag going on with Zoom, so no apologies necessary. Were you writing at this time as well? Did that serve as an influence over what you were doing?
Well, I'd say writing Writing, not really. I've been writing since second grade. And so that really, I don't think was a part of it. I think I was starting to write better and was kind of more interested in where that would take me. But I would say that I think the real thing that inspired me to change was my grandparents. My grandma has always been a huge supporter of mine. So is my grandpa, but she's just very, what's the word? Like, probably adamant would be a good word that I took voice lessons. I mean, she was, and not aggressive about it. She was very sweet about it, but she's like, I want you to do this. You should do this. And I finally said, okay, grandma, I will.
Oh, nice.
So that's really why, but she was like, you have some talent and you should really do something with it. And so we found a great teacher in the area, and I absolutely loved my time with Kathy too. She's just another wonderful teacher that I've had.
That's awesome. And what did the search for that teacher look like? I guess, how do you go about finding the right person there?
So that one actually, I think that was a Google search.
Classic.
But we went through a couple, and not like meeting them, but went through a couple of the websites, and she just seemed like the best fit. She also was in musical theater and did classical stuff, and I wasn't really doing musical theater at the time, but since I did when I was in elementary school, I was like, that'd be pretty cool to sing some musical theater songs, because I still loved musical theater and all that. So it was just, she just was the right fit, I'd say, for sure.
Ah, I can't believe I just glossed over that. You were in the world premiere of Emma, a Pop Musical.
Yes, I was.
Yeah, so how'd that come to fruition?
Oh, gosh. So one of my really good friends in high school was in theater, and she kept telling me I should audition. And I kept saying, no, I'm not going to do that. And I'm very much an impulsive decision maker. And so one day I woke up and I was like, tomorrow I'm going to audition for this. And I went to the audition, and I had just gotten out of the hospital with a concussion.
Oh no.
And I don't remember anything but looking up from the floor, because our theater director had a piece of tape on the floor that said smile. And so I just remember looking up and just singing. And I think I sang Titanium, but I could not tell you with 100% certainty.
Wow. That is absolutely wild.
Yes, I actually got the lead. So I don't know how that happened. That was my first musical that I ever auditioned for, like, really. Because we didn't audition in elementary school. We just kind of were handed roles. But yeah, that was the first thing I ever auditioned for. And I was so surprised.
So this begs the question, is a concussion the key to winning a lead role in a massive play?
I don't know.
Yeah, I want to say congrats, but then at the same time, that feels wrong to say because you got severely hurt, you know. What's really fascinating to me is you, at this point, had a foot in almost every facet of the music world. And I guess the actual question I'm getting to here is, was it a conscious effort to do that? Did you want to do stage and songwriting and get into the management side of the house? Do you mind walking me through that?
That, I think, definitely mostly just kind of happened. I've always been interested in a bunch of different facets of the music industry, but it just, like I said, I'm very much on a whim kind of person, so that even auditioning for music school to begin with, I really don't think I gave my voice teacher in high school that much of a notice. And Kathy, if you're listening to this later on, I'm sorry, but seriously, I mean, I think I told her like a month before things were happening, and I was like, hey, so I kind of want to do this audition for Belmont and Western Michigan University, because I was going to do music therapy was the plan. And she said, oh, I didn't even know you wanted to pursue music. And I was like, me either.
Hey, you know what? Inspiration hits and off we go.
Yeah. So that's kind of how that whole thing went. And then, yeah, it's just been some really interesting opportunities, I think. And I'm very much a person that kind of looks for just any opportunity that I can have to sing. I mean, I am very shy. I do have terrible stage fright, not to like the point of Sia where I have to hide my face, but
yeah,
it's just, it takes a second, but as soon as I'm kind of in the moment and just doing what I love, I'm fine. And so that's something that I think, you know, even performing in front of people and stuff like that, with those opportunities, that's just all I look for, is an opportunity to do something, you know?
Yeah. So what does that process look like? You know, you want to audition. Do you just go to your vocal teacher and say, hey, you know what? I'm looking at XYZ sort of auditions. What does that prep look like?
Yeah. a long time. People sing classical music for like a couple years, or have been singing classical since they were kids. And I really had only started singing classical probably 6 months before I auditioned for any of these colleges.
Hey, well, hey, it worked on out. You got into Belmont in the music school. Was that just a wild time trying to prepare then on really short notice?
I think it came pretty naturally. And it was definitely, the harder part was definitely figuring out how the auditions worked. I think the cool thing, because I was doing or trying to get into music therapy at the time, was that they wanted one classical and one commercial song because you study both. Mm-hmm. And so I actually surprisingly love classical music, even though my degree's in commercial voice. But so even leading up to that and learning all those, the classical song that I chose, because I think I did two. I had to do one in English and one in Italian. And I just sang them pretty much all day, every day leading up to that, because I really loved singing them. And so I think that was the easy part. But the auditions were kind of scary because they're expecting that you have, you know, a black binder and you have, I don't know, four copies of the music, one for each adjudicator, and then you have one for your pianist, and you have any notes that you want written in. And so that part was kind of scary to me because I didn't know what I was doing, really, but it all worked out. So
yeah, because you would think outside looking in, it's show up and sing some songs, but there's definitely a traditional process in yes. place for all this kind of stuff. And did you get to bring your own piano player? Was that someone that was there and you just had to hand them the sheet music and hope that there was some sort of chemistry when the song went live?
Yeah, so we actually had, I believe they were graduate students that were playing at the Belmont audition. For the Western Michigan one, they had an actual, I think, faculty member. But yeah, so you just show up.
Wow. Okay, so that's pretty intense. Because I'm assuming these are folks that you have not been able to interact with before. So you're showing up and just hoping that the adjudicators are having a good day.
Pretty much. You really don't know kind of who you're going to get. So from that perspective, it's very scary as well. Because again, you're hoping that it's going to be good and that they're going to like you. You're in your music and whatever. But yeah, it's very intimidating. And they give you like comments, I guess, at the end. And so, but you don't really know if you got in until weeks later. So that's also kind of scary, but.
Oh yeah. And then you just have to sit on it.
Yeah.
Which that stinks. It's almost kind of like cruel that you get the comments, because then if there's anything sort of negative, you just have to assume, like my ear always goes to something negative and I'll sit mm-hmm. on that. And then if it's going to be weeks, I'm going to assume I just didn't get it and think about whatever the negative comment was the whole time. But
yeah,
but that's awesome. So you end up going to Belmont. And for those who aren't familiar, do you mind walking me through what commercial voice is and what that program looks like?
Yeah. So commercial voice is basically the study of kind of the commercialized section of music. So it's not classical, but it is built on like kind of jazz blues roots. Mm-hmm. But you do take classical courses in the beginning. So typically you'll start off and you'll do your first year and a half, you'll do classical lessons. And then starting the second semester of your sophomore year is when you actually start your commercial lessons. And so that's kind of where your fun jazz and blues and I wouldn't say rock necessarily, but I mean, people do go that direction, but it's very, very interesting to kind of learn all those things. And then the really cool thing is if you're a commercial vocalist, you get a choice between learning pop music and country as one of your classes. And I chose country, which was very out of my element, but I absolutely loved it because it was just very different from what I know.
Oh, and was that just awesome being able to do that in Nashville where there's so much country history?
Yeah, it was amazing. And we actually got to talk to Josh Turner because he graduated from Belmont and our teacher taught him back in the day.
Wow.
And so she texted or called him and said, hey, do you want to talk to my class? And because it was during the pandemic and we were doing it all on Zoom and he said, yeah. So that was really cool.
He's like, I can't be on the road. So.
Exactly.
That's awesome that there's that kind of network too. Just Eve, I feel like tying that all together and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And what was that like on the job front? Because you were learning a lot of contemporary and classical applications of music. Were they educating you all on the various aspects of music you could go into and how the different disciplines applied? Like music publishing or performance, etc.?
Yeah, so something I did not mention, in the commercial voice program at Belmont, you get a choice of, I believe it's five different emphases, I think is how you pronounce that. Mm-hmm. And so it's music production, songwriting. Oh gosh. I don't remember. There's a lot. Music business is the one that I chose. So yeah. In that respect, yes. So you get to take a bunch of different classes kind of based on what your emphasis is. And it's super helpful because they give you a bunch of different tools. So, you know, you can take for example, I took music publishing, but then I also took recording technology. So I have a little bit of an idea of how to use Pro Tools and nice. Like very basic Pro Tools, but it's something. And then, but then I also know how to do kind of a few things in music publishing. And then you can take a whole bunch of other classes. So I know some people have taken like tour management and I believe there's an artist management class. So there's a whole bunch of different things you can take that kind of opens up your eyes to all the different aspects of the music industry post-grad. And the great thing is that a lot of these professors that I have had are pretty big names in their field. So mm-hmm. For example, I took music publishing with a gentleman named Dan Keene, and he is apparently pretty well known in the music publishing realm in Nashville, which I didn't know until I took class with him. But that was really cool to, you know, be surrounded with such amazing faculty that have been a part of the industry for so long and are so knowledgeable and can give you tools or connections or whatever to help you out later on.
Absolutely. And what's something that in hindsight you wish you'd known going into school? And I guess for folks that are looking to a program like that at Belmont, what advice would you have for them? I know for friends of mine personally, it was, you know, I wish I'd known how to study going into school, that kind of stuff.
I would say definitely networking. It's huge, especially in this type of industry. Because a lot of people, if you talk to them, a lot of the reason why they got whatever job they have is because they knew somebody. And you can have the best resume. You can have the best resume that anyone's ever seen. And someone that's hiring for that job can have a recommendation by a friend for someone that they know that is like the highest recommendation, and this person is amazing at what they do, and they will hire that person over you in a second. It's so true.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And I guess that's what's awesome too about learning from folks in your field, right? Is they can kind of guide you through those various avenues and whatnot. And you noted that you wanted to initially go into music therapy, and then that course changed a little bit. What inspired you to kind of go the more business route?
So the business, music business part was actually something that I really had no idea what I wanted to do emphasis wise. But I kind of thought about it and realized that no matter what I do in this industry later on, if I'm the songwriter, singer, or if I am working with someone else who's an artist, I want to make sure that neither one of us gets burnt, because I've heard so many bad things about bad business deals and all kinds of stuff. And that just, I would hate to be in that position. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of what, I guess, changed my mind. And I wouldn't say changed my mind, sorry. What kind of led me that direction.
Yeah, that's awesome. And did you know, pre-pandemic and going into grad school, which aspects of the business you wanted to go into or are still considering?
Yeah, I think music publishing still.
Yeah.
With the internships, though, I think that's kind of changed now a little bit. I really am interested, since I've been working with Grit and Magic Entertainment, which is Cam's management team. And I'm just very interested in what they do. And the whole artist management side has been very interesting to be learning. So,
yeah. And then I guess getting under the hood a little bit, what surprised you the most when you got in with this management team about how an album is rolled out and whatnot?
Oh man, I think just the many hats that they wear. Oh my gosh, it's changing every day and yeah, like every hour of every day, which has been really fun and really challenging. But it's just been super interesting to learn, because, one minute we're just doing kind of the day-to-day emails and responding to people's inquiries and all that kind of stuff, and then I'm doing some scheduling, and then all of a sudden I'm mailing out vinyls to Cam's celebrity friends. And so it's just very, very different and can change so quickly.
For sure. And that album is dropping next week, correct? Or is it this week? End of this week, right?
Week.
Friday?
Yeah, the 30th.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Very cool. And for listeners, that is October 30th. So it's likely already been out for a few weeks by the time this comes out. So go check it out. But for those listening, do you mind walking me through what the kind of prep looks like for a release week of this magnitude?
I'm technically just like interning until the album launch. So okay, I don't really know what post-launch is like. So I don't know. If I find out, I'll let you know later on. But, but as far as like the couple of weeks leading up to, because I've only actually been interning for them for like two and a half weeks. Mm-hmm. So it's been my part has been very small. But leading up to it, there's a lot of like publicity things that they have to do. So for example, Cam was on the Kelly Clarkson show today doing an interview. And she's been doing a lot of interviews with radio stations and just trying to get the word out there about the album. So that's been a huge thing, scheduling those interviews and making sure, that everyone's where they need to be and stuff.
But a lot of moving pieces.
Oh, yeah. And then we've been working on some merch order stuff. So that's been interesting, because I'm not I had no idea that was part of it either. But yeah, so there's just a lot that goes into it. I'm not really being very eloquent about this.
No, that was perfect. I think it's interesting because there is so much under the hood that's going on, and it's also a global pandemic to where I'm sure there's a lot of wrinkles and stuff. Like you mentioned merch orders. I know for a lot of folks. There's back orders because facilities are being slowed down in the way that they're trying to put everything together, and you got to be super careful when sending stuff out, especially at scale. So,
yeah.
Rewinding slightly to your time with Haley and Michael, I know that was toward the end of your time at Belmont. Do you mind walking me through how you searched
for opportunities? That was actually my final semester at Belmont.
Really made that happen? Because I know a lot of folks get into school, they understand how everything works, you learn how to study, all that stuff. But it's not always easy discovering how to A, find opportunities, and then B, capitalize on them. Did you have a method that you went through to filter opportunities and or network to get into that space?
So Belmont is actually really great about preparing you for internships, especially if you're studying anything within the Curb College of, Curb College of Music Business. So they actually have an internship class that you can take.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah. So it kind of prepares you for everything, from the interviews and having your resume, your cover letter, all that stuff. So coming out of that, was very helpful, because I felt like I had a better grasp on things than trying to do it on my own. Mm-hmm. And so I was actually kind of freaking out because I had applied to a bunch of different, internships that December and had not really heard back from any, and the ones that I did not want me to intern for them, which is fine, because like my mom always says, when one door closes, another one opens. And so this one happened to be our internship coordinator at Belmont had emailed us about a couple of internships that were still open. And this was so casual, and I absolutely loved how chill Ryan Michaels is, because I emailed and I said it was very formal, like embarrassingly formal.
Yeah.
And I was like, hi, Mr. Michaels, I'd really like to apply for this internship. Please let me know what you think or whatever. And he responded back, yeah, sounds great, or something like that. We'd love to have you. Like, would you be ready to interview this week? And I was like, okay. So yeah, it was one interview. And at the end, they said that they wanted me to be part of their intern team. And because there was eight interns. And since they are independently released their last album, we were kind of learning about everything and how an independent release works, which is very interesting because not a lot of people really understand, I think, all that goes into doing an independent release because everyone's so used to people being on labels.
Yeah.
And so that was really fascinating and kind of learning how they do everything. And just being a part of that was really cool. And so to your question about the networking stuff. So actually Danica, who hired me for this intern position with Grit and Magic, she is also part of the Haley and Michaels team. And so that's where I met her. And so we worked together during that internship. And then when she was looking for some help for some of the stuff that Grit and Magic was doing for this album release that Cam has going on, she asked if I would like to help her. And I was like, heck yeah, of course. So yeah, networking is super important, just to reiterate that.
Yeah, and just clearly you proved yourself to be a great partner during that time too, because I think that's something that's really important is no matter how big or small a project is, it is like the people around you that's going to kind of help create that. So that's very cool. And so what did that look like? You mentioned there was eight of you and there was clearly a difference in how independent was run versus major label. I guess, am I inferring correctly that it was also how y'all were received as well? Because I'm assuming when you say people are accustomed to like major label, it's that they have established contacts that consistently reach out.
Yeah. So I was kind of more talking about just in general. I think people kind of associate like the general population of people just associate these big name artists and people who are making the Billboard charts with being on a label or being signed. Mm-hmm. And even so, in today's today's day and age with being able to make music online and not have to go into a studio or anything, that's not happening anymore as much.
Right.
Because Shannon and Ryan made one of the Billboard charts, releasing their song independently, and they just kept pushing for, you know, people to find it, and they did. And it's just, they're very inspiring in that, because I've always been wanting to release music but not knowing how, and so that's kind of, getting to learn from them has been really, really cool.
I guess, what was one of your big takeaways from that? Because they do have, you know, they've got like internet, or I guess national coverage from like Billboard's Artists to Watch, or excuse me, from Huffington Post Artists to Watch. Billboard has covered them before. So what was it about them and like the way they worked that you think enabled them to kind of reach that scale?
Yeah, I think part of it was that their song Hail Mary was just such a really inspiring song. Very, very catchy and just amazing. And then they got an opportunity for the San Francisco 49ers to use that as their anthem for the last football season, which that's huge. I mean, that's on a huge stage. And then they also got that song put into a movie called Walk, Ride, Rodeo, which also was a huge thing because that's on Netflix. And it's a wonderful story about, I believe her name is Amberly Snyder. I think that's her name. And she was in a car accident and was paralyzed, but she got back up on her horse and started doing her rodeo again, which is super inspiring. And then they had Hail Mary playing in the background. And so I think people just kind of gravitated towards that and just really resonated with people for sure.
And as someone who was interested in music publishing, did you gain any insight there as to like how that process worked for the purposes of like pitching or anything like that?
Yeah. So we had kind of smaller teams that we split up into. So pretty much everyone, I think, was kind of doing social media stuff because that was more of a team collaboration, which was really fun because we all got to be a part of it and got to throw out ideas, and that was really, really fun. But I was part of publishing, and then there was another one that was doing kind of the learning how to do, like the setting up of the equipment and stuff for recording. Sorry, that was a very long-winded way to say that, but
No, you're all good.
So there's a bunch of different things, and then there was someone who's really good at editing, and so she was kind of the one that did some of the posts and stuff, and she got to figure out how to play around with that. And then the cool thing was that at the end we all got to come together and create our own show, which was cool. Huge. Yeah. And so we were supposed to have it at a venue, and we were getting, you know, all these contacts and talking to people and stuff, and then COVID hit. And instead, this is another great thing about Shannon and Ryan and Danica, is that instead of kind of giving up on the internship and saying, well, ooh, sorry, you know, there's a pandemic, like we're just going to be done, they worked so hard and said, no, you guys came up with this show, we want to still make it happen. So how can we do that? So we came up with a live stream, and we did an Instagram live, I think every night of one of the weeks in March or April, I'm going to say April. And they called it Songs from the Sofa. And so they interviewed the guests, and they were all up and coming Belmont students who were the artists.
That was so cool.
Yeah. So that was really awesome. And that was a very, very exciting thing that we got to do. But I think the teams thing really was cool, just because I think so often, at least from what I've heard in my friends' internships, is that you're kind of alone and you're kind of learning by yourself, where this was a very collaborative thing. And there was me and another person who were doing the music publishing. And so we were reaching out and figuring out not the calculating of the artist splits, but who the other I'm sorry, the songwriter splits, but who the other songwriters were, and putting those into the spreadsheets and just making sure that everything was correct. And so that was kind of really interesting to like get to reach out to people and say, hey, I'm working for Haley and Michaels, and we were just wondering, you know, who this songwriter is and what their role was. And so it was just really interesting to kind of get a hands-on look at what you would do in a real music publishing situation. So
yeah, which is cool, because it sounds like the way y'all were set up was to recreate that of like an a la carte record label, which was, we're going to take care of each of these divisions, essentially, I guess, record label and publishing firm.
Yeah.
And so when you say that, for folks that like aren't familiar, these songwriting splits, was that for future sessions that they were trying to set up, or was this actual like royalty collection that you were looking into on their behalf?
Yeah. So it was songs that they had already written, and then they were just trying to, or written and recorded. So some of them were singles that they had already released. So it was just double checking everything and making sure that we had the correct metadata.
Yeah, which is huge. And in something that I'm not really educated enough to start speaking on, but with the Music Modernization Act, sounds like it'll be interesting, because they're in theory supposed to be that like central database for all songwriters and whatnot, which
yeah,
hopefully would make that a lot easier than having to track everybody down. How was, if you don't mind me asking, how was that experience? Was it reaching out to artists themselves or their publishers, or having to figure out whose artists' publishers were?
It was actually just reaching out to the other publishers.
Gotcha.
So not too difficult, thank goodness, but
right.
It's always hard to write those, like, not corporate emails, but more professional emails. I always struggle to write those because I don't want to sound like I just got out of college, but you know, you just want to make a good impression, I guess, on people.
As the music industry evolves, do you see something in the future where you're doing a hybrid role between the two, or would you say it's better to focus on specifically one or the other?
I'd say probably best to focus on one or the other, only because I think with artist management, you're kind of wearing so many hats as it is that it would just, I think, be kind of difficult to add right. another one to that when you could outsource and use an actual music publisher. But I don't think it's impossible.
With that, like, what was your biggest takeaway from that publishing side of the house? Like, how easy did you find it? Or I shouldn't say how easy, but how was it developing those relationships over time? Did it seem that, being that you were in the space, folks were relatively open and cooperative and making those different things happen? Or was it a lot of following up and really having to prove yourself through communication to kind of get the ball rolling with like these publishing work streams?
People were actually pretty open and very friendly, which was very nice, because you never know, you know, when you're meeting someone, especially virtually for the first time and reaching out, it's definitely, you never know what's going to happen. But they were very helpful, very prompt. I think I got one of the emails came back like 2 minutes after I sent it out.
Wow.
So yeah, and that's something that Danica said kind of happens a lot in this industry, is that when you see an email pop up in your inbox, if it's right there and it's top of mind, you should do it, because otherwise, with how many emails everyone gets a day, it can get lost. And so that's something that, especially working with Grit and Magic, that I've learned, which is I need to do better at that.
Did you have like a program that you were using to keep track of everything? I'm curious, because there's, you know, so many people involved. How do you centralize the schedule of said artist or something like that?
So we actually just use like the Google Calendar. So
nice.
Yeah, and it works. We have they have like the different callers for who's going where and doing what. So it definitely helps to keep it organized.
For sure. And I guess what's important to note as well is you're also now going to grad school amid all of this.
Yes.
So do you mind walking me through what led you to Berklee College of Music and specifically going for that master's in music business?
Yeah. So I actually toured Berklee forever ago, it feels like. That was one of my original colleges that I had on my list, but I decided that it wasn't the right time, and that I'd kind of think about, you know, getting a degree from there later on. And so I kind of had it back of mind, I would say. And then it just popped up on my, I think it was my Facebook timeline one day that Berkeley had an online program. And I said, well, now's not a bad time to do it. And yeah. I'd always wanted to get a master's degree at some point. And then kind of like we were talking about earlier, just with the pandemic hitting, it just seemed like it was the right time, because I'd been looking for a job for like 4 months at that point, and it was kind of just the most logical step, I think, in furthering your education. And then once you're done, you're able to step out and say, hey, I have a master's degree too. I don't just have a bachelor's. So I'm very knowledgeable about the music business.
I had a very similar experience. How long was it between your decision, or when you discovered the program, and your decision to apply?
I think it was less than a week.
Okay, same here. I literally, my friend just graduated. I had two friends. One just graduated from Berkeley, like, campus, and then another that just completed online for undergrad. And it's funny because, yeah, it's a very similar, like, I guess I'll go this way now.
Yeah, because it's such a weird time. You don't know, like, what you're going to be doing tomorrow, pretty much.
Yeah, seriously. And what's interesting, too, is just they've had it set up so well that it was like reassuring once starting, you know, because I did have that, like, what did I just do?
Yeah.
Thing. But what has stood out to you, I guess, the most throughout your time at Berkeley, and as it pertains to like kind of this remote world we're in? It's this interesting thing of going to school, of like you mentioned, during a pandemic, while a lot of the music business is shut down. And I think, as we've talked about a lot outside of this podcast, is what 60-odd% of the music world come, or the revenues in music, comes from live music, and that's gone now. So yeah, I guess, what has been your like biggest takeaway from going back to school during this kind of crazy time while the music industry is kind of on a lull?
Oh man, that's such a good question. I think just being more aware of how to, since I'm trying to be an artist myself someday in the future, just being more aware of other types of revenue streams that exist outside of touring, as well as how to be more marketable, because I think that's something that I struggle with personally, because I've dealt with a lot of like self-confidence stuff growing up. And so putting myself out there and marketing myself as, you know, the super confident person and stuff, I don't think would work for me personally, because I want to be honest with people. So I think it's definitely figuring out like the fine line between kind of how I can market myself in the future so that people will want to listen to my music, and just kind of finding different things that work. Just in general, I guess, because also I'm finding that it kind of is tying in with my internship with Grit and Magic, is I'm learning a lot kind of in that sense in school, and then I can bring it back and see, oh, they are doing that, or I wonder if we tried this if that would be different, you know. So it's very interesting to kind of pull from both worlds and see how they're the same and different.
Yeah, that is awesome. And I was gonna say, you have such a holistic perspective of what all of this looks like now as you look to like launch like your own artistry. And I guess, do you have stuff publicly available?
Not yet. So, it's, I'm very terrified to release anything. Let's just be honest.
Totally. No, I feel that. That's very cool, though. Is this process giving you more confidence to do that, being that you're learning so much about the industry, really from all facets?
I think it's definitely been inspiring. Just to kind of see, one of the things, let me back up, sorry. So one of the things that I think is the best quality or idea or whatever you'd call it about music is the fact that it brings people together and they can share a common feeling depending on what the song is trying to convey. And I've always loved that. And so that's what I try to do with my music. And so I think just having this really cool kind of backseat and getting to watch, like, as part of the team, but also kind of from a distance of what Haley and Michaels and then now Cam are doing, and how they've touched their audiences in their different ways. And it's just such an incredible feeling. Just is because that's what I want to do. That's what I want to do. And so, for example, Cam released a song called Forgetting You. I think it was last week off the album. And I heard it and just like cried. It was so good. And my first thought was, oh my God, that's what I want to do. I want to make people feel something.
That's awesome. And so with that, do you see yourself doing your artistry in parallel while also going into the business side, like say at a publisher or for another artist? Or what do you kind of imagine your next? And it's such an obnoxious question. I'm so sorry, because you probably just got done having your family and friends ask you upon graduating, what's your big plan? But for you on a personal level, like what do you see developing over the next couple of years, like in an ideal sense?
I actually love this question. So yeah, I think, you know, I definitely want to be an artist, but that's kind of more of a side project for right now. I think just because for so many people, it takes such a long time for them to actually make it in the music industry.
Yeah.
And that's a huge thing that was kind of a rude awakening at Belmont, you know, is our professor for my voice studio was like, hey, no, it's not going to happen overnight. And he wasn't being mean about it. He was just being honest. And for example, Lizzo's like in her 30s, I believe. And no one had ever heard of her until last year. And so it's just very, I think you need to be honest with yourself. And that's something that's been hard for me, is because of course I want it now, but I also know that I need to take time and really perfect my craft and make it into something that people will want to listen to. And then my time will come. And so I think for the next few years, definitely focusing on kind of the music business side. And then my songwriting and artistry will be kind of like a passion project, I would call it, for the next couple of years until I'm ready to kind of put myself more out there.
I love that approach too, because it is also so much of who you know as well. And I love that concept of, I'm going to perfect my craft here on the side. But at the same time, if you're in that artist management or publishing world, that opens everything up, you know?
Exactly.
And that rapport will be there to, and especially one thing that I've found just in talking to other professionals in like the publishing space is it is relationship management. It really is sales at the end of the day with music. And so that trust is going to be crucial. And if when that project comes and you're ready and you're like, you know what, I've got it right here, you're going to have that rapport with everyone. And that's going to be super cool to watch.
Definitely.
Yeah. So before I let you go, I actually have like a rapid fire segment that I do, which is strictly to try and get people stumped. That's the perfect reaction. So it's just an either or. I'm going to ask you which option you like better, and you just give me whatever comes to mind. So Dave Matthews or Sarah Bareilles?
Gosh, Dave Matthews. I love him.
Yeah. Which is awesome, because hey, I'm a Seattle guy, so that's awesome. Did you ever come out to the Gorge shows? That probably not. Such a whack question to ask you, but
I'm so jealous.
Yeah, I don't know if he's still, I mean, pandemic, I guess it's not happening, but yeah, I don't know if you're familiar. He does like this weekend out at the Gorge in like central or eastern Washington, and it's just this beautiful backdrop, and just does like 3-4 shows in a row, like consecutive days. It's just basically a giant festival, but it's only him and whoever opens, kind of thing.
That's amazing.
But I have friends that are very big into that. I've actually never been, but I know it's like a huge, is it Labor Day weekend or Memorial Day? It's be Labor Day weekend is traditionally how it's gone. But Emma or Annie?
Probably Emma. Better songs, I think. They're more fun. Right.
Artist management or publishing?
Wow, this one's hard. Okay. I'm leaning more towards artist management, I think.
Okay, right on. Yeah, and then I won't make you choose between your universities. I thought about that, and I was like, that'd just be a brutal move. I like to kind of wrap this up with just like the why of it all, right? And so you talked about wanting to really make people feel something with your own music, but I guess I'll turn that into a two-parter, which is, why do you work in music? And then, why do you make music?
Why do I work in music? So my dad has always told me to find a job that I love, and so that every day does not feel like you're really doing work. And that has really stuck with me throughout this whole job search and college and everything, is just that I don't want to feel like I'm doing work every day. I do want to enjoy what I'm doing. And so that's why I chose music, because I love it so much. I love listening to it. I love playing it. I love learning it here, you know, everything, everything. And so that is a huge, I think probably the biggest reason why I work in music. What was the second one? I'm so sorry.
No, you're all good. I've thrown so much at you today. So would be like, why do you make music?
How do I make music? Oh, I think it just goes back to human connection. I'm a big, big person that loves just connecting with people on a deeper level than just, hey, how you doing? And so I think music has done that so much for me. I think especially like Linkin Park's last album that they released before Chester passed away was so big for me, and it was just, I felt so much that entire album. And then looking at Dave Matthews Band, I have so many great memories of singing that in the car with my dad and my brother when I was very little. And so it's just connecting to other people, and that's why I make music. I want to connect to people through something greater than just conversation.
And then I guess with all that's going on, I guess in all the stuff that you want to do, what would you tell your younger self to prepare for all of it?
Oh gosh. Just be ready for anything and everything, because as much as you prepare for something, something else is always going to happen that's going to change it. So you can think that you're well prepared, and that you want to, for example, do music therapy, and then all of a sudden commercial voice is going to come out of nowhere and smack you across the face, and you're going to choose that instead.
Yeah. One last question before I let you go. For folks that are going into music, and specifically still in school and trying to figure out what they're going to do next, whether they have something lined up or are looking for a new opportunity, what would your advice be to them?
Ooh, trying to break into the music business. I think just be flexible is a huge one, because a lot of people in the music industry are going to be doing 10 different things at once, or they're going to live on the opposite side of the country as you, and you just have to be ready to get on a Zoom call like we're doing now, or just anything. I mean, you just have to be flexible and really just be open to kind of whatever people in the music business throw at you, because there's going to be a lot of unknowns and things that you don't know how to do. But I think if you're trying to break in, just be ready. Be ready to do anything and learn anything.
Sure.
And then people who already have, I think it was like internship or first role. Is that what you, okay. For that, I would say, just make sure that you make good contacts, so that you can continue to network in the future, because if you end up, you know, if that's just a short-term internship, or if you decide that you don't want to work there a year from now, you still have a contact that can get you another connection somewhere else in the industry, and that can help you get another job in the future. Or just, so there's other opportunities that could get you a publishing deal, or you really have no idea all the things that having great connections can do for you. So just be open to that as well.
For sure. And there's so many spaces too. That's what I'm been learning lately. I'm like, I did not even know how many different fields there were in music. Like, admittedly, I didn't even know about the publishing realm until like 2-3 years ago or something. I think especially to the general public, like you were saying, everyone assumes it's just major label. Super cool to see just how you've navigated all this. So thank you again so much for taking the time. Anything you want to plug or any way that if anyone wants to connect that they can get a hold of you?
So the things that I would like to plug for, first, we'll start with all my lovely musical friends that I'm hanging out with and learning from. So first of all, Cam's album, The Other Side, comes out this Friday. And right now it'll be October 30th when it comes out. But since this is coming out later, it'll be out. So go listen to it. And then Haley and Michaels, they also have an album out. And I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head. But their single is called Hail Mary. It's amazing. Listen to it. And then also my friend Molly's band Life in a Tree is also amazing. And they just dropped their single Fake Reality in August. So good. And then as for me, my Instagram, you can follow me, is at tegan.mccormick. And so that's at tegan.mccormick on Instagram. And then my YouTube is just my name, so Tegan McCormick, and that's where you can follow me.
Right on. Well, be sure to plug all those channels and whatnot. And again, thank you so much for taking the time. I know it's late by you, so genuinely appreciate you doing so.
Yeah, thank you so much. I so appreciate the opportunity. This has been so fun.
I'm so glad. This has been a blast for me as well, and it's been awesome to just get to chat.
Yeah, definitely. And if you have time some other time, I'd love to hear about all the stuff that you're doing. So.
Yeah, thanks again for doing this. I'll definitely let you know, and cheers.
That was Fake Reality by Life in a Tree, a band consisting of some of Tegan's friends who currently reside in Nashville, Tennessee. As well, Tegan just dropped one of her own original songs, Thinking of You, on her YouTube channel. So be sure to go subscribe to her channel and show her some love on that track. I really want to thank her for taking the time to walk through her experience at both the undergraduate and graduate level for different facets of the music business. Feel free to reach on out if you want to learn some more or connect with her in the space. As always, if you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. Truly appreciate that extra effort, and I will see y'all next time.